Hello and welcome back to the MJA podcast. I'm Kate Swanell. In January of 2019, the MJA published a summary of new infant feeding for allergy prevention guidelines from the Australasian Society of Clinical Immunology and Allergy. One of the key recommendations was that parents should introduce potential allergens, peanut and egg, in the first year of their baby's life, regardless of allergy risk factors. A year on from the guidelines release, a collaboration of researchers decided to find out if the guidelines had had any impact in the community. Thanks to a smartphone app called Smart Start Allergy, they've been able to quantify the impact, and the results have been encouraging. Over 80% of parents are now introducing their infants to peanut before the age of 12 months. My special guests today are Sandra Vale, the National Allergy Strategy Manager, Dr. Michael O'Sullivan, a consultant immunologist at Perth Children's Hospital, and Dr. Alan Lieb, a GP who helped develop Smart Start Allergy. Alan, let's start with you because this Smart Start Allergy came out of Smart Vax. So can you tell us a bit about Smart Vax and how you moved through into the Smart Start Allergy stuff?
Firstly, what is Smart Start Allergy? And basically, it's an active surveillance tool using SMS and smartphone technology to try and assist us to educate parents about food allergies in infants and also to try and identify allergic reactions to the food. This project was developed in response to the increasing prevalence of food allergy in our kids. And as a GP with an interest in pediatrics, I found it quite distressing just to witness the emergence of food allergies in our kids. When I started clinical practice, it was almost unheard of. The first few cases I've had, I really questioned whether it was a real entity and whether, how could you be allergic to food? I also then found that there was a lack of knowledge in the true incidence of food allergies in the Australian population. And, I certainly couldn't find a whole lot of information around, why it had happened and what was going on. I have an interest in pediatrics, and in 2011, I developed SmartVax following the FluVax disaster. And that's a tool using SMS technology again for active surveillance of adverse events following immunisation. So we developed that in 2011 and progressed that and developed a network around SmartVax, which has grown over time. And I had a chance meeting with Michael, and he had heard about the work we were doing, and I was invited to present at an ASCIA dinner meeting. We shared some thoughts and developed some thoughts on how we could leverage this technology and try and make a difference to our kids with food allergies. This was all in, I think it was August or September 2016, and the new feeding guidelines were introduced by ASCIA in 2016.
Yeah.
And this recommended, early introduction of food allergens to children, including peanut and egg, to start feeding these kids during their first year in life. And we believe that this would reduce the incidence of food allergy. We also knew that the National Allergy Strategy had an interest in promotion of these guidelines, and obviously the close connections with ASCIA and Sandra's team at NAS, we all got together and put together a project. We were really fortunate to receive funding from a grant from the Perth Children's Hospital, which we received in, I think it was March or so, 2017. And also funding from NAS itself, which has been really great. In support of this, we developed Smart Start Allergy. And basically, as I said, it's a tool for the active surveillance of these children and to promote the ASCIA guidelines and then monitor parent-reported allergic reactions during these kids' first year of life.
So the current feeding guidelines say give your infant these potentially allergen in the first year of life to see, A, if they're allergic, and B, if they can end up not being allergic or not develop an allergy. Is that fair, Michael? Is that what it says?
Yeah, look, essentially that was informed by some really sort of good quality evidence from clinical trials that showed, particularly in children who are at very high risk of developing a food allergy, that starting foods, and specifically peanut from one of the really seminal research studies, showed that introducing peanut in the first year of life led to fewer kids overall getting an allergy than if you waited until you were 5 years of age and then started eating peanut. And that was very different to what some of the observational studies from 20 or 25 years ago had suggested. Seemed to be an apparent correlation between being exposed to the food in early life and developing allergies. So for a while, the recommendations were if you were at high risk, you should avoid the food. Those recommendations were removed but not really replaced with anything specific to guide either clinicians or the community of what to do. And now because of some really good evidence for peanut in kids at high risk of allergy and also some evidence for egg in preventing allergies from developing, I guess the guidelines are trying to drift people back towards more normal feeding practices, introduce foods when kids are developmentally ready from around 6 months of age, and include the common food allergens in the first year of life. Good advice for all kids.
Yes.
And hopefully reduces the risk of developing allergy in those kids who are at highest risk, accepting that there will still be some kids who have food allergic reactions. Those reactions might happen earlier in their life because if they waited until they were older to eat the food, we wouldn't know they were allergic until they were a bit older. So one of the important things that we wanted to do, and as Alan touched on, we really wanted to know what the uptake of those guidelines were and then what the effect was going to be in perhaps shifting the epidemiology of what we see as allergic reactions by encouraging introduction in the first year of life in a real-world setting outside the clinical trials, which had suggested it was safe and effective, but we really wanted to know in day-to-day practice in the broad community whether the expected rates of reactions were what we were going to see based on the evidence that came out of the research studies.
I just wanted to add to that. I think it's kind of important to note as well that the ASCIA guidelines were the first guidelines internationally that actually came out promoting the introduction of all common food allergens in the first year of life. So given that, you know, the majority of the research underpinning the ASCA guidelines is based on peanut and, as Michael said, some on egg as well, you know, it was a little bit unknown as to, you know, what was going to happen with the introduction of the other common food allergens. So being able to monitor what's happening at the community level, whether parents are actually introducing and if they are, what reactions are occurring, was really important to make sure that, you know, the guidelines were actually not going to promote something that was going to result in more reactions.
Okay, Sandra, perhaps you're the one to tell us a bit about the design of the study and why you chose to go that way.
What we've reported on in the paper is, you know, contacting parents at when their child is 12 months of age and asking if they've introduced foods with peanut. And peanut was chosen, I guess, a bit of as a marker because everyone knows about peanut allergy and there seems to be quite a parental fear around peanut allergy. So we felt that if we were asking the question of if they'd introduced peanut, that likely that they'd introduce some of the other common food allergens as well. So that was just to know whether, you know, they're actually following the ASCA advice. Then we also asked them if the child's ever had an allergic reaction to any foods. And then from there, we send them a link. Whether they've had a reaction or not, we send them a link to a survey where we can collect a little bit more information about them as a family and the family history for this child, whether there's eczema in the family or other food allergy in the family, to get an idea of whether this baby or this child is at higher risk of developing food allergy, because it's the children who are at higher risk of developing food allergy that actually have the greatest benefit from introducing particularly peanut in the first year of life. So, you know, being able to capture that information was quite important as well. We are looking to also, we're collecting information which we'll hope to publish further down the track, collecting information from other families with babies at 6 months, 9 months and 12 months. And that's where I think Smart Start Allergy can really come into its own as an education tool as well as a monitoring tool. The beauty of using Smart Start Allergy as well is that it goes through the GP practices. So the text messages are being received by the parents from their GP practice. So they're considered a credible piece of contact and a trusted piece of contact. And also, you know, they're often having conversations with their GPs around introducing foods to their baby and see their GP as a trusted source. So again, you know, any information that we're then providing onto them through links to the National Allergy Strategy NIP Allergies in the Bub website, which provides some practical information, can be seen as being credible because it's coming from their GP.
Michael, just a technical question. Do we know what the mechanism is at play here? Is it like being inoculated?
That's still an area pretty active research. There's a few different hypotheses around, but probably, I guess, one of the sort of most intuitively seeing ones from my point of view is the idea that, I guess, our immune system is supposed to be exposed to foods and foreign antigens through our gut. It's kind of the way we're designed, that foreign things go in our mouth. Basically, every food we eat is foreign to the immune system.
Yes.
So the immune system has to be designed to tolerate and ignore most of what comes in to our system via the gastrointestinal tract, the sort of normal process for food and nutrition. If we get exposed to the same allergen through a different route, and in particular through the skin in a child who has eczema, we're getting exposed to the same allergen in a different immune environment. So it's both a different physical exposure through the skin, but also bringing that allergen or that food into an environment which has got an allergic type of inflammation, which is part of what underpins eczema. Then the immune system can have a very different response to the same food, whether it encounters it through the skin or through the gut. And so I guess the underlying hypothesis, and at least the one I sort of subscribe to and discuss with families, is that we're supposed to eat the foods that are common in our diet, mm-hmm. in our parents' diet and in our environment from the age at which we start to introduce solids. And so bringing those foods in as a regular part of the diet from a young age is a way that you expose the immune system to the food in a way it's designed to tolerate, and then the early immune response, if you like, the vaccine response equivalent, is that you tolerate the food. And if you can embed that immune response in early life, then it probably is the persistent immune response you have through into adulthood.
Even when you're exposed to it via your skin?
Yeah, if you then subsequently get exposed to the skin, I guess the dominant response is one of tolerance or regulation. Doesn't always work. That's the thing that perhaps in that early life window, we think there's a period where you can have a degree of sensitivity.
Yep.
We commonly see in kids who have eczema that if you do blood tests for allergies, and for that reason we don't routinely recommend it in kids with eczema, but they make IgE antibodies to lots of food, part of their underlying predisposition with atopy and eczema. But to counteract that, they have a regulation response, probably from exposure to that food, maybe through breast milk initially, maybe mm-hmm. through attention of food once they're starting onto solids. And it's that counterbalance, that regulation that allows their body, if you like, to suppress the sensitivity so mm-hmm. that even if allergy test is positive, they don't have a clinical reaction when ingesting the food. So that's really the rationale, I guess, for why we say we want the food started early. If you have an allergic reaction to the food, then you should stop it. You've already got a dominant allergy response and you're not going to build up a tolerance in that way.
Okay.
But if you start the food and you tolerate it, then regardless of what your allergy tests might say down the track, if you're eating the food regularly, if you're not having reactions, importantly to keep them in the diet regularly, because it's not just it's not a one-off like giving flu vaccine once a year. It's about regular mm-hmm. exposure
yeah.
to maintain that tolerance. And I think that's one of the messages that probably wasn't as clearly picked up, the guidelines. The idea is you give it once and then you
keep it
in the part of the diet.
Yeah. I'm chatting today with Sandra Vale, Michael O'Sullivan and Alan Lieb about food allergy prevention in young children. Their research can be found at mja.com.au, where, like all our research content, it is open access. If you're enjoying this podcast, you can dip into our archives at mja.com.au/podcasts and sign on to our feed at iTunes. Just search for Medical Journal of Australia. Back to our chat. What were your major results from the study?
We were encouraged by the results. Mm-hmm. It was from our SMS message responses from parents. We found that 86.2%, so a really great number, were actually introducing peanuts by 12 months of age. And then when we looked at the data from those who then went on to do the questionnaire, we actually found that 89% of those, that cohort, were actually introducing peanuts. And also, you know, the other common allergens such as wheat and dairy and egg were also really high, like 96-98%. So that's great because it does indicate that people are following the ASCIA guideline. It is similar to the data that's coming out of studies in Melbourne as well. So it was nice to have that more national representation, I guess, of responses and be able to compare that with a Melbourne cohort. So it was good to see that, you know, people are following the ASCII guidelines. And then when we looked at what a number of reactions that were occurring, these were relatively low. So the majority of the reactions were to milk and also to egg and peanut. And there was around 13% reported reactions. But of those, 40% were not really considered to be what we would call an IgE-mediated reaction.
Meaning what?
That they're less likely to be immediate allergic reactions.
Right.
That have a risk of anaphylaxis. That's what we're trying to do, is reduce the risk of food allergy and potentially food allergy that has the potential to cause an anaphylaxis.
Did anything in the results surprise any of you?
I think that it actually just confirmed anecdotally what we were hearing from GPs, that more parents were introducing the common food allergens. We hadn't really had a way to measure that before Smart Start Allergy came along in a national way. So, you know, to get that confirmation of, you know, what GPs are telling us they're seeing in their practice, I think is really great. It's one of the issues that we have in Australia, is data around allergy in general is improving, but it's not fantastic. And I think the other thing is that, you know, the fact that Australia was the first to take this kind of public health approach, you know, the ASCII guidelines have been very widely promoted through the National Allergy Strategy, and it's really important that we help people to be able to do this easily, but we also make sure that we're keeping people safe. And so to find out that, you know, the number of reactions and the number of reactions that were severe were very low, really encouraging and reassuring for us going forward in continuing to promote the guidelines.
The authors of the guidelines and ASCII generally would be really pleased with the cut through that the guidelines seem to have had.
It's fantastic from them. You know, it's one thing to put out a guideline. It's another thing to have that information filter down through the community. You know, and there have been previous studies done looking at, you know, uptake of the ASCII guidelines, and I think what we're seeing in our response rate of the, you know, in terms of the people who are giving peanut to their babies, you know, by 1 year of age is fantastic and more than what we thought we were going to get.
Alan, what's the future for apps like Smart Start Allergy and Smart Vax? Where else can you see these things going?
I think we've still got a lot of work to do with Smart Start Allergy itself. Mm-hmm. Currently, we're around 70 sites across Australia, with a predominance in Western Australia. Smart Vax has got over 330 sites across Australia. Our first plan is to expand Smart Start Allergy, and Smart Start Allergy can go into practices that aren't running Smart Vax as well. It's not an absolute requirement. Some really exciting stuff. We're starting to get small numbers, but as Sandra alluded to earlier, we've got two arms to our study, in that we've got an early contact group where we are sending SMSs to parents at 6 months, and then at 9 months, and then at 12 months of age. And just looking at the patterns of early food introduction, what are they introducing when, how's that going? And then also excitingly, at the 12-month mark, we're asking parents whether they've got peanut allergies and whether they've got food allergies, with quite a comprehensive survey which we've attached to that looks at other factors such as eczema, allergies in parents, where the parents have come from. And I think that information, when we start getting a lot of data back, is going to be quite exciting.
Brilliant.
We should certainly have a pretty good handle on the prevalence of food allergies, and particularly peanut, in our population. And hopefully, early stage looks like, you know, our early intervention or early contact group is certainly making a difference. More parents are feeding their kids solids at that age and peanuts at a young age. And then another really exciting part of our project is that, you know, we've got 13% of kids who we've now got a handle on with peanut hesitant parents. And so what do we do with these kids? Because we know that the longer we delay the introduction of peanut to those children, the greater their risk is of developing an allergy. The other thing we know is that those kids are probably at high risk because there's a reason they haven't started peanut, and that's because, you know, either another sibling's got it or parents have it, or, you know, there's some other high-risk reason. So, you know, another phase of our program will be to try and educate parents to safely introduce peanut to families. Another part of our program will be to educate and get involved more with GPs so that GPs from their practices can educate these parents. So what we currently do is we notify GPs through their inboxes when we do identify a child with a significant food allergy so that these GPs can follow those kids up. And the other really exciting part of this will be to try and develop a streamlined referral process so that we can get these kids seen by clinics such as Michael's in an efficient and cohesive way. I think this is just the beginning for this whole program. It's really quite exciting what I think we can still do with it.
Michael, where do you see apps like this helping? But do you see areas where they can help your research, for example?
Absolutely. I think it's really useful to have apps and approaches like this that are sort of fit for purpose for what we actually want to learn. So there'll always be a role for the sort of very scientifically rigorous large population cohort studies that give us the absolutely high quality evidence on challenge confirmed food allergy, and that's really what underpins a lot of the recommendations and knowledge that we have at the moment. But if what we want to find out is what parents are doing in terms of infant feeding and when parents are suspecting allergic reactions, and I think it's reasonable to ask the parents some pretty simple questions about that directly. So, and ultimately, from a practical point of view, there's an important issue to address. If a parent thinks their child has a food allergy, then that in itself is the clinical problem that needs to be addressed. Whether or not we ultimately diagnose that child with an IgE-mediated food allergy after they see a specialist. If the parent's waiting a couple of years to get an appointment and they think their child has food allergies and it's leading to a lot of anxiety around feeding, dietary restrictions, that in itself becomes a problem that needs to be addressed. It's really important that we link some of the research work we do to the real-world clinical problem. Food allergy is common, and it's common in the community, it's common in primary care and general practice. So rather than just doing our research surveying people who we see in a hospital allergy clinic, I think it's really important that we know what's happening in the majority of patients with confirmed or suspected food allergies who we're not actually seeing on a regular basis in our clinics, because we see them infrequently and we often don't see them until quite a lag after the reaction or after the problems emerged. So
yes,
I think this is a really good way of getting information from a large part of the population. There will be limitations to the information we get, but I think provided we're aware of that and acknowledge it, it does provide a really valuable contribution alongside the more sort of traditional approaches to epidemiological studies. And it allows us to start to then design some really practical clinical research studies, as Alan alluded to say, well, look, how do we address the problems that are there? So if we've got 1 in 10 parents who, for whatever reason, are really hesitant to feed peanuts despite being aware of the guideline, can we provide an intervention that addresses that problem for that group?
Cool.
And it may be a different reason for hesitation in two or three, and there might be two or three main reasons within those groups. We can then, I guess, provide a service and show that it's hopefully effective that addresses the problems that are occurring in the community rather than a purely sort of academic question around standardising an approach to everybody with a peanut allergy or everyone with eczema. So I think this allows a much more adaptable and targeted approach at a community level for a common problem rather than relying on sort of academic, university, tertiary hospital-based research. We're not the only people who are taking this approach to common problems, but I think, as Alan mentioned, given the rising incidence that GPs are seeing, it's really important that we engage and collaborate with GPs in answering questions about food allergy and try to come up with a solution. So this is a really valuable way that we learn what's happening outside the walls of a tertiary hospital, and it's also a really useful way that we are engaging with practices to say, well, look, here's the problem that the practices have identified, and let's come up with a workable solution that we think the practices can support, parents can use, GPs can use, rather than doing something that's great for a hospital. But practically, if you tried to implement the same thing in a busy GP practice, that is just not going to be feasible.
I think that this has been a really successful project because of the collaboration. We've got, you know, great clinicians like Michael, we've got a specialist. We've obviously got the fantastic technology that through the adaptation of SmartVax to create smart start allergy and having that expertise, as well as the GP expertise through Alan. But I think also the fact that we have those education resources to support as well. So, you know, through what the National Allergy Strategy has developed, those really practical guides for parents, but also for our GPs and other health professionals in terms of educating them. But, you know, the practical for parents on how do you actually do this, how do you introduce those foods, you know, for the different stages of development that your baby's at. So I think that's why, you know, this can really, you know, become an amazing success story, because we've got all of those elements working together.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
My thanks to my special guests today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.